In this episode, I sit down and talk to safety professional Jonathan Furtado. Now, Jonathan is a Safety Pro Podcast community member, and we got to talking recently about something he went through several years ago that fundamentally changed his life. It actually got him into the safety profession. So we're going to get into that story and how he started sharing that story with others and asking that question, you know, is that worth it? And we'll get into that topic in a lot more detail in this episode because it's something that we need to start adding to our conversations. And again, we'll get into it in this episode. So buckle up as I sit down and talk to Jonathan Furtado. Before we get into today's topic, I want to remind everybody, if your business is reopening after any kind of closure due to COVID, or you've continued to remain open, but you're struggling with how to mark your facilities to ensure physical distancing and relay important information about safety and health as it relates to COVID, I want you to go visit our friends over at Mighty Line Floor Tape. Mighty Line has some great products for you to mark your floors, whether it be the stand here, the 6 feet distancing, or just floor tape to denote lanes of travel. They have everything you need to mark your facility. So hit the link in the show notes, visit our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. They are incredible partners in safety. I can't thank them enough for their support of the podcast. Again, Mighty Line Tape for all of your floor marking needs.
All right, we're here with Jonathan Furtado. Jonathan, you and I got connected through the podcast and through the Safety Pro community site. And thanks for being a member and your contributions to that community. And you shared with me a story that that's very personal that happened to you, and that you were able to then share that with others at work, especially during talks, giving talks and such. I want you to go through your story, but what's the overall theme, and what can people take away before you get into exactly what happened?
Okay, first, Blaine, I want to say thank you for all you've done. When I started as a safety professional, I stumbled across the podcast, and it's been super valuable, and I've implemented a lot of that stuff in past employers. And the community, super awesome place to be. It's got a bunch of actionable intel, PDFs, things like that you can actually take back. So very, very appreciative of, you know, being a part of that community and being able to with you today. I guess the overall theme, the story that we had talked about, the overall theme is taking unnecessary risk in what we do each and every day. So, yeah, so basically we'll talk about the difference between an unnecessary risk and necessary risk that we have to take.
So when, and this is funny because we talk about it at work. We say, look, we understand that sometimes not everything's going as planned, and you have to make an adjustment in a process or a machine or something like that. And we get that. We get that you have some latitude in exercising some judgment. But there's a line to that, right? There's a limit to that. And it gets into, okay, how do we assess whether or not this is a necessary risk or unnecessary risk? And is it worth it, right? So get into your story and how you kind of saw this after this happened to you, how you kind of saw this line of, is it worth it? Adding that to the equation, not so much is it necessary risk or unnecessary risk? That third component, is it even worth it, is something that I don't think a lot of us talk enough about.
Yes, sir. I think you're absolutely right. And it was a hard lesson learned, right? I didn't realize that, some of the things we do every single day can impact your life. And some of the simple things that we go out and we think nothing about it could either end your life or dramatically change it. And this was something completely outside of work. And it was before I even become a safety professional. And it was kind of one of the driving factors to getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump right into what happened, or what led up to it. And I know you've talked about this before, so I just want you to I just want you to unpack it for us so that those of us listening and watching, by the way, we're recording the video for the community site and the audio will be for the podcast listeners. But, you know, anybody listening or watching later, maybe if they wanted to reach out to you or if they want to kind of look back in their own life and with similar stories, because I do believe if you can personalize, if you can make it personal and you can, you know, push that what's in it for me, that use that benefit language when we talk about taking risks, I think most of us can look back and think about a moment, maybe not like your story, but certainly where we could have said, yeah, I probably didn't need to take that risk, you know? So yeah, just go ahead and launch into what were you getting ready to do before this happened? Like, just share your experience off the job, some of this recreation stuff that you did.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is back in 2017. Just like any other day, you know, my brother calls me. He says, hey, what are you doing today? I said, hey, you know, I don't have any plans at all. He said, well, let's load the four-wheelers up. Let's go out. And that's not something that's uncommon. They could just, you know, he'd call me any time on the weekend and say, hey, let's go for a ride. Let's go, you know, play around, whatever the case might be. So I said, sure. Yeah, no problem. You know, we loaded up, went out there. I never thought about any kind of, never thought that there was a potential to get hurt in any of this. So we thought about it, went out to the usual riding place, been out there probably hundreds of times, and got the four-wheelers off, and we rode around for a little while. And, you know, it was kind of odd. It wasn't different than any other day. He says, hey, man, look at that hill. He said, I bet, I don't know if it was lunch or whatever, but he said, I bet you can't make it up to the top of that hill. And me being a young man, pumping full of testosterone, I said, oh, you're going to be buying me lunch right after this. This is going to happen. I'm going to make it to the top. It was around the time it was fall, right? So there's all kinds of leaves on the ground. It was yellow and orange. You couldn't see anything under the leaves, but you knew there was a hill because of the steep incline. So he said, oh man, I bet you won't. Kind of egged me on a little bit. And then when I was getting ready to, he said, man, you sure about it? He said, are you sure you want to try that? I said, absolutely. I'm sure I want lunch. And I don't want to pay for it. So, you know, I was down at the bottom of the hill and man, I gunned it. And I'm almost to the top, adrenaline's pumping, knowing that I'm about to win this bet. I'm about to look cool. This is about to be, you know, the best thing ever. I can say, I told you so. And, you know, he's going to have to pay for it. Well, about that time, I get up close to the top and my front right tire on my four-wheeler, the ATV, it was a 4Runner or a 4Trek, sorry. So I hit this bump and the whole four-wheeler came up. Later on, we actually found out that it was roots that had grown so deep there and the dirt had ran out, kind of eroded away around it. So it was sticking up. And I hit it and I popped back. The four-wheeler came up. I tried to jump off and, you know, the four-wheeler came down and crushed me. And we, myself and the four-wheeler rolled on down the hill. I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was bad hurt because have you ever, you know, stubbed your toe and tried to run the pain off? That's kind of what it equates to in my brain. But I was in a lot of pain, so I tried to run it off. I took two steps and I crumbled to the ground. I started vomiting on myself. I told my brother, I said, hey, call an ambulance. We got to, Something's bad wrong. Something is very, very wrong. And he looked at me and said, you sure you can't just try to walk it off? I said, no, man, call an ambulance.
Brothers, right?
That's it. So he calls an ambulance, gets him en route. But the odd thing was my uncle, he's an EMT right around the area that we was riding. So I'm laying on the ground and we're close to the road and my uncle comes cruising on through. Didn't even know that we was out there or anything like that. My brother waved him down, stopped him. He come running over and it was just so odd that, you know, that timing just worked out, that there was someone there to get me a quick preliminary assessment. And good thing he did, because he found that I had, how do I want to say it, signs of a spinal injury. Mm-hmm. So he called in an air flight. First thing I said was, no, don't do that. That's going to be expensive. Just give me a ride out to UC. He said, John, trust me. He said, if anything you've ever done, please just trust me. We've got to fly you over here. And I'm thankful that he did now. We get to the trauma center and, you know, they're checking me out, doing their assessments. And this is at the University of Cincinnati, actually. And they're doing their assessments. They send me in for an MRI. And man, the only thing I knew that there was so much pain. Well, they come back in and said, hey, you know, we have to do surgery. We're going to have to fuse these guys. You have a shattered vertebrae and it's kind of compressing your spinal cord. Oh, really? Oh, man. So when do we go? They said, well, we can't. The problem is right now you have two hematomas that are growing on the side of your spinal cord, just pockets of blood filling. And we have to try to wait for the swelling to come down. I was like, wow, that's not good. But at this time, you know, I'm still able to move my feet and have plenty of sensation everywhere. You know, mind you, my wife, she was 7 months pregnant at the time. So we had to call her at work too. She's just getting here when they get the MRI done. And, you know, I had called her in the ambulance and I said, hey, you know, I'm on my way to the hospital. Something's wrong. I just want you to know that I love you and my daughter very, very much. Which, thinking back, probably not the best thing to do, but I felt like I needed to say it. You know, at the time I thought I was dying, but that really kind of freaked her out. So it took her, you know, she left work, sped to the hospital, and, you know, she probably took a risk that she didn't have to take then either. So anyway, they say, hey, we got to wait for the swelling to come down. This is July 1st, I believe, of 2017. You know, I'm in the hospital for a couple of days, swelling still not coming down. They're doing an MRI each day to check that out. But on the 4th of July, you know, they came and do their assessment on me, make sure I was still in good shape. They took this little rod and they rubbed, like they had been days prior, rubbing it across my feet to see if I had sensation or if I could feel it. You know, the old, hey, press this way, push, you know, push back. Well, on the 4th of July, they came in that morning and they did that little test and I couldn't feel it. I couldn't feel it. Yeah, I told them, I said, hey, that's not good. You know, I could still kind of move a little bit, but it was decreasing. You could tell it was decreasing. So they rushed me in for emergency surgery. It was about 7.5 hours. Those hematomas had actually swelled and swelled even more. They weren't coming down. So they had to put a drain in my back. You know, during the surgery, or after the surgery, I woke up and it felt like I had, you know, just sledgehammers beating into my back. That's just what it felt like. It was just such a rough recovery. But anyway, I woke up, they got it fused, got the pump in, all that, which was pretty extensive, right? 7.5 hours to get in there and do a little bit of work. They told me, hey, with some degree of certainty, you are going to be able to be mobile again, right? You do occupational therapy, you do some physical therapy, you're going to be able to walk again. You might have to learn a little bit. We'll teach you some tricks of the trade, adjust how you walk, but make sure we do it with good posture. And, you know, we got to build your strength back because you took a lot of damage. So I said, okay, sure. You know, I can do that. No problem. I'm some would say probably a bullheaded guy, stubborn. So I did. You know, I did the physical therapy while I was there, got up, moved around. It was good in that sense. And then they told me, they said, all right, we're ready to release you. We're going to continue physical therapy at home and occupational therapy to try to get you worked out. You know, they tell us about all the physical pain and the road to recovery there and all that you might endure, all the discomfort you'll have. But what they don't tell you about is the mental stress that you're going to go through. And me, again, being stubborn, very prideful guy, I got home. My wife is 7 months pregnant and, you know, I'm staying with her and she's not leaving my side. She's trying to cater to me. She's trying to do all these things. But the messed up part about that is my wife is 7 months pregnant. I should be doing all these things for her. I should be taking care of her. I should be clean and I should be cooking. I should be making things easier on her. But instead, she's catering to me because I can't get up past a 45-degree angle. You know, she's doing all these things for me. You know, I'm out of work. I'm on short-term disability. I'm feeling kind of worthless, you know, pretty worthless. She never made me feel that way. She always told me, you know, that she was a good support system. She did everything that she could, and I'm very, very thankful for that. But still, in my brain, I felt worthless. So, you know, I finally recovered and been super thankful about it. But thinking back, I had to go through all of that over a sandwich, you know, over being bullheaded and saying, hey, I'm going to make it up this hill, or I'm going to go do this. Something that I didn't have to do. You know, I could have had good recreation, good fun, and doing it in a safe manner. I could have just, you know, continued on the way we were instead of, you know, hitting that hill and going on up. That was just a unnecessary risk that I didn't have to take. And how often do we do that? How often do we do that in everyday life that we don't even think about? Like going down a flight of steps, you know, we're skipping a flight of steps, or, you know, one of the stairs, we're trying to make it quicker going down. We're not using the handrail. You know, that could be catastrophic. If you did that at the top and you fell all the way down a flight of steps, you know, you may not recover from that well, if at all. But we don't think about it. We think that it's so minute and we just do it because it's going to get us there 2 seconds quicker. But we get that we have to take risk in our life, though. We do with anything. We have to get in our vehicle and we have to drive to work each and every day. But if we can be proactive and plan and say, hey, I'm not going to pass anybody if I don't have to. I'm not going to go way over the speed limit. I'm going to watch out for emergency vehicles. I'm going to watch out for vehicles on the side of the road, for bikers, pedestrians. I'm going to take all that into consideration on my way to work. Same thing that I should have done when I got on that four-wheeler. I should have took all things into consideration and tried to outweigh the risk, or have the risk not outweigh the reward. Because, yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. But what did it cost me?
And you bring up a good point, a couple of good points there. It wasn't just the physical pain and recovery that there was that psychological impact as well, compounded by the fact that, as you said, your wife was pregnant, 7 months pregnant, expecting, was that your first child?
Yeah, my first Nolan, my little girl.
First child. And, you know, how long did that take? Did your recovery take? I mean, quite a while, right?
It was months to get back to where I could actually operate well and get back to work and do those things.
When you think back on, and I think back on my first child with Jennifer, and I don't remember being laid up in bed, right? In recovering and everything. So that's a memory that's like, it's baked into that life-changing event of having your first child. And so something that was interesting when you first told me about this was, you often hear these stories of the physical recovery and how hard it is and difficult it is getting around and getting back to work. And so you're talking about something that I don't think a lot of people talk about, and that is the impact on your family and the impact on you psychologically and how tough that can be. And you mentioned feeling worthless, and you know, we probably, you know, we're a little older now, right? And you can look back and think, you know, maybe that was kind of silly, but it was real at the time, right?
Yeah.
So you also mentioned something else. You mentioned, like, you could have still had a good time recreationally. So you're not saying, you know, don't go four-wheeling or don't go get in your car, but there is a line there, and we almost don't know where it is until we get to it, right? And so isn't that the trick, right? Is we have to be self-aware enough to say, okay, that hill is a bit much, but that hill right there, probably not. Let's go over there, right? I mean, it's just being able to stop that snowball from going down the hill, and then next thing you know, you're doing stuff that's just insane, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you, when you talk to folks about this, like, do people ask you about this, and how do you balance those two? You could still go out and enjoy the four-wheeler, but there's a line, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I say, I know it's going to sound cliche, but I just say, think twice. Think twice about that. That's all it boils down to. Think twice about what you're getting ready to do and what action you're getting ready to perform. You know, I tell people my story and I share it with them, and they're like, oh man, that's rough. But I don't ever say, hey, don't ever get on a four-wheeler. Let's wrap you up in bubble wrap. And, you know, that's how you need to operate in life. Like some people expect safety folks to say.
And we don't actually. We understand there's acceptable risk to everything we do, and that's something we accept. So let me ask you, when you liken this to like other, because I know I've seen you speak on this. I saw the video. You use examples of other activities and how on their face they seem risky, but we have safety controls. Shooting sports, right? Recreational shooting. I mean, you think about it, you're using a weapon. I mean, that can end horribly, but there are controls. There are things that you can do to make that safer, right? While you're doing it. So, and I think that's the message is, you know, don't screw around. It's like, yeah. I tell my son, you know, we went to the quarry this past weekend and they have all these inflatable, it's 20 foot deep. There's no lifeguard on duty. You got to sign a waiver and you go down there and these all these floating inflatable things that you just jump off of and stuff. And I was watching them play, four boys, right? Him and his friends that took the camper down there is in Indiana is where it is, called Hidden Paradise. It's really cool. And I'm watching them. And you know, like, okay, that jumping around and playing is generally okay. And then it started to get really rough. And I'm like, all right, time out. You can't. I have to be able to swim to you if something happens. There's no lifeguard. I got to be able to pull you out of 20 foot deep water. I got to be able to get you all the way back to the dock. Yeah, don't. One of the kids is a wrestler at high school. And the other ones aren't. So he's like shoving the head and like you're putting them on choke. And I'm like, okay, you can't do that. You know, there's a line. So that's what made me think about your conversation and your story was like, this is a perfect example of how boys egg each other on or kids, especially kids, if you're not watching them, and how it escalates. And next thing you know, they're doing stuff that you're looking at it going, what were you thinking? You know, and they didn't think twice. But we're talking about adults. How does that happen with adults? You and your brother, right? It's kind of funny how you can make a bet in for a sandwich. So you said, is it worth it? My son and I remember talking on the, posting on the membership community, about this, about my son's driving instructor. Told him in the context of driving on the road is one, is it safe, right? Is it so like going to pass somebody? Is it first, is it safe? Is it legal? And then is it worth it? Like just to get ahead. I mean, you look ahead, there's a stop sign, there's a stoplight, you're going to end up stopping anyway and stuff like that. So is it worth it? So for you, the risk of going up that hill now looking back, right? The reward was bragging rights and maybe a sandwich.
And a lunch, yep. Yes, sir, no, it was not worth it. I can say that unequivocally.
So what do you think goes through the mind of the average guy? And then now, of course, you in the workplace, and you've been around a lot of you know, industrial work and technicians and folks, what do you think? Do you get a sense from them, like, of when you see risk at work, what is typically the reward, do you think, that they think is they're going to achieve?
Yeah, so it depends on what level of risk. So if we're talking about like lockout, tagout, and if they say, hey, we're going to go through this whole entire process where we have to get this locked out, this tag, you know, this tagged out, an authorized employee down here to sign off on it, do a voltage check, and ensure that it's at zero energy, when simply all we're doing is opening this door up and putting a component in here, it'll take me 2 minutes. I've done it 1,000 times before this, you know, lotto program came out and these rules came out. So it'll be 2 minutes versus 2 hours and having to work through lunch. So I think for most of the folks there at work, it boils down to two different categories, comfortableness and how do I want to say the next one? I guess how to save time, right? How to not necessarily cut corners, but how to save time when they could be doing something else. They don't want to get too caught up in some lockout tagout rule when they've been there since late 60s and they've changed that part 1,000 times at about, you know, it would take 2 minutes and now this job takes 1.5 to 2 hours. So yeah. I think it's about convenience and comfortability, you know, yeah. for those guys. And that's the risk that they're willing to take.
Yeah. And often when they say I'm just trying to save time, in a roundabout way, they think they're looking out for the company, right? They're saving mm-hmm. the company. So I can get 2 more work orders done today than I would normally have to do if I follow this procedure. So I think you're onto something. I think that from the top down, we have to send this message of, you know, your time is more important and more valuable to us than the time it takes to install this component, right? Your mm-hmm. time away from work, your time in the hospital, your time away from your family, that's more important. And so if we can effectively have upper management, senior leaders send that message that we will not cut corners, we will follow these procedures. If it takes 2 hours, that's how long it takes. Then, you know, if we can have them set that expectation, and we talk a lot about setting expectations with safety, we like to skip that. We like to hang the banner, but then we don't change our expectations. We still track to how many work orders did you finish today, right? And that pressure leads to what you just talked about sometimes. And so I think if we can adjust our expectations along with our message of safety first, your safety is most important, and then not go into the next meeting counting how many work orders they did or didn't get done today. Have you seen some success in that messaging? Or do you still see, in large part in most organizations, we still lack that setting the expectation, changing that expectation?
Yeah, you know, it's the old saying, right? Talk the talk, but you don't walk the walk. We get out there, we say safety is number one. It's all we care about. It's all we care about. But then we have a frontline supervisor that comes to their employee and they say, hey, why did you only get 1 work order done today? You know, I gave you 3.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where you kind of fall in line with that, setting the expectation. One thing that I found that kind of brings it to a personable note, if I see an employee out there and I don't, you know them well, but they may be doing something, cutting corners, whatever, I ask them if they have a wife or if they have kids or if they have family. And even if not, do you have a dog? Do you have a grandparent? Do you have a mom and dad? And then I simply say, would you like to go home and see them again the same way you came into work this morning? Would you like to be able to have a conversation with them? And then sometimes I share my story. Sometimes I share stories of others. You know, we had an individual that ended up getting blinded on the job, had 2 little girls. We'll never see them again. We'll never see them again. And I share that story often, especially when folks aren't going to wear their eye protection or, you know, face shields or things like that. And just take a real pragmatic approach to it, saying, hey, I know you love your kids because you seem like a decent person. Or I know you love your wife. You seem like a decent person. So please do this while you're here and off the job. You know, just think about these things. Think about what matters most to you. And that seems like that is one of the more effective approaches if you aren't getting the buy-in from some of those upper leaders like you were talking about, Blaine.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I had an old captain. I always talk about Billy. He said, everybody that dies at work dies surprised. I mean, you could say that about injuries. You said somebody was blinded, and I'm thinking back on people I've talked with and worked with in the past that suffered, you know, a serious injury and survived, but, you know, they carry that with them now, you know, going forward, and they talk to other workers about it. Every one of them say the same thing. They're like, oh, I never thought that would have happened to me. Yeah. That's the point. You get this false sense of security of, nothing happened the other times I did this, therefore it must be safe. You know, the absence of an incident doesn't necessarily make something safe. And so I think it's very important if we have these policies and procedures, and it's not that we can't improve them. We should always be looking to improve our policies and procedures, but yeah, we have to be very careful when when we even unknowingly promote this culture of get her done, right? And by any means necessary, and certainly with the more senior workers, not senior in age, just senior in experience, having done something for a while, you know, they have a responsibility to the new employees of any age, just new to that organization or new to that process, to set an example. And so if you can get them on board, that's incredible. So yeah, but you're okay now after all of that. How's everything going for you? Have you had any long term, talk about like how this is still with you in some way?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you kind of mentioned it earlier, which was a good point, right? Now a little older, now kind of look back at the situation and know that, hey, I wasn't worthless. Things have worked out well. I'm a good father and I'm a good husband and I try very hard. But the physical implications, they're still there. There's always some amount of pain every day that's normal. Some days it's worse than others. For example, the very first thing I have to do when I get up in the morning, I have to take a very hot shower just to be able to move around and get through the day. And, you know, last year, actually, I broke the screws that were in my back and I had to go in for another surgery and they had to take it out. So that one incident led to another surgery and now there's broken studs in my back and that'll be there forever. You know,
yeah.
The pain will be there forever. There'll always be some amount of normal pain in my life because I thought it would be cool if I won lunch and had bragging rights to go up the hill.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. So yeah, if you think about that, it isn't just that moment, is it could have a permanent impact on your life and what you're able to do, you know, with your kids or with your family. So yeah, that's an incredible story. And I remember when you shared that with me, I immediately thought, I got to talk to you about this. This is something we struggle with. And so you said that happened to you, years ago, 2017, and you hadn't gotten into workplace safety yet. So what made you transition from what you were doing and get interested in workplace safety? I mean, it was that event.
Yeah, so it was that turning point, right? I was an operator, I was a controls guy, I worked in the craft, I was one of the guys.
Yeah.
That event changed my life forever. I went to school, got a degree, and said, hey, you know, I'm gonna help make sure that things like this don't happen to American workers in American workplaces. I'm gonna try my best to be a resource and be a leader and say, hey, you know, simply things aren't worth it. You know, you're still getting paid to be here. You're still working very well. Nobody thinks any different of you because we're making sure that we take breaks in 120 degree weather. You know, we're making sure we wear our cool vest. We're making sure we do these things. And I care about you and your best interest. And that's honestly why I got into safety. It was that point.
That's good. That's excellent. I think a lot of us have similar stories. You know, when I was in the fire service, I had a couple of events occur that, you know, made me think, why, you know, we could stop this type of stuff from happening. And that's what got me in the private sector. But it's unfortunate how often, though, right, we see negative events, you know, move us to do positive things. We had to go through that pain and suffering before, you know, we got there. So the best thing we can do is what you're doing, right, is sharing this with others. And we can learn from others' experiences so that we don't have to experience them. I hear people say this a lot. It's like, well, the two-year-old almost has to burn their hand on the stove before they learn. I'm like, no, they don't. they don't need to get a second-degree burn on the palm of their hand to learn that the stove is hot. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. We know it's hot and we can stop that from happening. And then as they get older, they'll go, oh yeah, I'm so glad my parents didn't let me stick my hand on that just to learn the lesson. So I love that we're able to share those experiences with others because they don't have to go through that and hopefully come out the other side being a better person. They can learn from that experience vicariously. So what's on the horizon for you now? I know you're taking on a new role in safety, which is exciting. You're going to start that soon. We don't have to mention companies or anything, but have you thought more? And I know we talked a little bit about this. Have you thought more about sharing this story to a broader audience? I mean, not just a podcast here, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you're right, Blaine. I start my, new position next week. Super excited about it. I've thought about it, but I also feel as if I want to grow a relationship with some of these folks, talk with them, let them get to know me, and then start sharing my story and then getting things out there and making sure we get them up to speed and teach them all the different facets, all the different dynamics, all the things that could happen. And then I have a lot of learning to do myself, right? It's a new facility, new to me facility. Anyway, new industry to me, actually. So I'm going to depend heavily on our community members here with your community and the Safety Pro podcast. Those people it's unmatched. People will get your emails, send documents, and get all kinds of different risk metrics or matrices out there. I'm going to depend heavily on it, I'm sure.
Oh, good. I'm trying to stay. I'm trying to keep up. And I really, as far as the community goes, it's really just the interactions we have with the members is what make it such a community. I feel lucky to have folks like you, not just listen to the podcast, but interact. I mean, that's what's great. People think like it's just a one-way relationship. I get so much out of, folks like you that reach out and share your stories and your experiences. And that's what led me to the community site. But you know what? I know that, ASSP just had their conference, I think, right? I could see you. I'm just going to throw it out there. Don't say anything about it yet, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I could see you talking to groups of safety professionals on, how they can better connect with the workforce with stories like yours. And I could see you doing presentations on this. So think about that. I would encourage you. I'm putting you on the spot here in front of God and everybody.
That's okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think there's something there, man. There's something there. And I think you have a great story in the way you tell it. And you really make it personal.
Yes, sir. I greatly appreciate that, Blaine. And, you've been such a great help to me throughout all this.
It's an incredible story. Yeah. So we're both in Ohio, so we share that in common too. I didn't realize you were that close. I'm just north of you, and we'll have to get together. We'll have to do lunch. I won't make you climb a hill to get it, though. How's that?
That's okay. I think I'll pay my own way.
You're done. You're done with that, right?
No more bets. No more bets.
Okay. All right. We'll get together soon. Well, Jonathan, yes, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. I'm going to post the video, by the way, is on the community site, and we'll have some photos. As Jonathan was telling his story, he shared some photos with us, so we can put that up on the video as well. But for those on the audio, consider joining the community site. Folks like Jonathan are there, our active members. And we're always doing some exciting stuff over on the community site. We do some off the job, like non-work related stuff too, and posts. But yeah, look, Jonathan, thanks so much again. And we'll post this as well on the community site, like I said, but also for the podcast. So be on the lookout for that. Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing your
story. Thanks, Blaine. Appreciate you.
All right, there you go. My conversation with Jonathan. Look, you can catch posts and comments that he makes, as well as many other Safety Pro Podcast community members, over at the Safety Pro Podcast community. Hit the link in the show notes if you're thinking about becoming a member. Otherwise, I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast.